The People's Show with Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Jamie ate like 19 hot dogs.
Yeah.
It was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Second hour of the People Show today. Bik Nizar, Randeep Janda, and Jamie Dodd. And, of course, you as well. 650-650 in the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Always appreciate when you're part of the show. The smart alternative, visit Dunbar Lumber on Bridge Street in Ladner or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Before we went to break, we asked you for a pair of tickets to the Nooner at the Nat on June 3rd, Seas versus Spokane. Scott Walker, drafted by the Canucks in the fifth round in 1993. Who was the first overall pick in that draft, Randeep Janda?
The answer, Alexander Daigle. Remember him? The next one, the great one, whatever they called him. Ended up playing 616 games in his career.
Had
in the
career.
NHL. He had a good NHL career.
Had a career.
Went over to Switzerland, did his thing there as well. But the hype was real with him. Never lived up to that, obviously. Congrats to DJ in Surrey, who came in with the correct answer. You win the two tickets to the Nooner at the Nat on June 3rd. Maybe we'll see you there. We had a lot of right answers. We also had one that said Brian Lawton. That was an 80s pick. It was a nice guess.
Yeah.
First pick overall, but just a different draft.
At least that was old. Like, someone texted in Crosby. It's like, well, that was like, yeah. Man, that was 2000s.
Maybe,
come on.
Maybe Daigle was Crosby before Crosby.
Good one. Good text coming to the inbox. I think they want a do-over on that one. Pronger going second overall. Whew.
Yeah, I think so.
Noted Sportsnet intermission guest, Chris Pronger.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
The hype, not just for Daigle too, but the combination of Yashin, because they got Yashin in 92 at second overall, yeah. And it was like, oh man, you watch out for the Senators, Yashin and Daigle, here they come.
Okay, so looking at that draft, number four was Paul Kariya.
Yeah.
Right? And number nine.
Jason Arnott was also in that draft.
Arnott was all that. Number nine, the Canucks director of amateur scouting, Todd Harvey, was taking ninth overall, so there is a Canucks connection as well.
Played more games than Alexander Day.
Yep, and what's the connection to Scott Walker? They are both on the coaching staff with the Guelph Storm as well. So there you go, Todd Harvey, that 6 degrees of separation. He always ends up working with Scott Walker in some way or some form.
It's a pretty good first round there for...
Deadmarsh, yeah.
Yeah.
Saku Koivu, number 21.
A lot of Canucks on there. Mats Lindgren.
Todd Bertuzzi, 23.
Todd Bertuzzi. Dennis Peterson. A lot of Canucks in that 1993 first round. Never Paul Kariya, though.
No.
Ba-dum,
even Kevin Weeks, friend of the show.
In first
the
round?
Second round.
Lot,
yeah. That tells you, though, you know, that era where you're just making so many moves. That
Tyler Moss in the second round as well.
Okay.
We're officially into the...
Name random players.
Yeah. Name random
players. By the way, did you guys see the graphic for, you know, the Big Three, the basketball league? For,
yeah.
Like, I guess they do a draft every year, and they released... the pool for the draft this year.
It looks like a
music festival.
Yes.
Graphic. Yes, it very much does. But also just like incredible ground for a trip down memory lane like we like
really?
To do on this show. Oh my goodness, some of the names. It's like Jamario Moon.
Oh, let's go.
Ronaldo Balkman, Festus Azili.
Knicks legend, by the way, Ronaldo
yes,
Balkman.
Yes, exactly. Like,
please,
just
some
really,
him.
Really great names from the past. Also a lot of guys I've never heard of, but some good names from the past,
I feel like we'll have to do Name That Guy at some point later on in the show.
I think we do that every show.
We do tend to do that. We really need to get production for that segment here. I'm just looking at the list right now. Calvin Johnson, does that... It's not that Calvin Johnson, is it?
I don't think so. I don't think he's making... Can you imagine if they got Megatron?
I mean, tall enough. He's massive. He's fast
seriously,
enough.
He probably played basketball at Georgia Tech or something.
Wait. J. Cole's not on this group, is he? He's coming to Canada, baby.
No, man, he's playing pro
ball.
Pro ball. Glenn Rice? Man, this is awesome. All right, well, shout out to the Big Three draft. Bik Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Live coverage will be provided here on Sportsnet 650.
Man, it is a loose holiday. By the way, I looked up all the holiday dates. You guys were roasting me here. The stat holidays in BC. The only one that's like late is Christmas. Because New Year's Eve technically isn't a day off.
Yeah.
So it's the first, which is January, Canada Day, and BC Day. But really, like the latest one is Christmas. That's it. So my assertion was right. That it's weird to have a holiday on the last like couple of days of a month.
But I don't think it's weird. It might not be common, but I don't think there's like something wrong with it.
You know what's weird?
This conversation.
This conversation.
I didn't say weird is bad. I just say, oh, it's
this is the kind of
uncommon.
This is the kind of conversation where I'm like, why am I even engaging in this? I don't care. But there's just something in me that's like, no.
It's like Bix driving around in a roundabout just over and over again. Yeah. I want to talk about holidays again. Move on, Bix.
I wasn't wrong. That's just what I wanted to point out. That's all. And you guys were so mad. 650. Someone's texting in. How do you decide who wins turf trivia? It's random.
We put it in a draw.
It's random.
We have no favorites on the show.
No.
We all love you equally. Yes. You're our children.
Yes. And I encourage you to always compete. That's it. Just keep sending in those right answers.
This text, I want to get to it because I don't think we've ever had an Ottawa Senators fan text into the show. Not that I can recall. As a Senators fan.
Wait. Can we get a drum roll? Like, is there a drum roll for this? I don't know if we've ever had a Senators fan text.
Or like a sad clown.
At least not one that's identified themselves as such.
Yeah. Yeah.
I actually have a Senators fan drop if you want.
Please.
Oh, wow. This is even better.
As a Senators fan, I am too familiar with that number one pick.
There you go.
So there you go. Just not poor Senators fan is just not happy.
Please identify yourself when you are a Senators fan. We'll give you some hype here. As much as we can.
As much hype as the Ottawa Senators deserve. Let's be honest.
I wonder which NHL franchise has the least representation in our listenership. The fewest fans. It's got to be the Arizona Coyotes, right?
Yeah.
They
don't even have representation in their own market, let alone here.
Yeah. Today's not the right day to do it because it's a holiday, but if there are any Arizona Coyotes fans listening, text in, please. 650-650. Or maybe call in. Let's talk.
Who's got more fans here locally? Sens fans or Jets fans?
I would say Jets fans.
I think that one's a little closer.
Yeah, I think it's closer, though.
Just because they're newer, they're cooler. And they have the legacy, obviously. But, like, getting the team back would have probably drawn some new fans.
I don't know, though. Going to Rogers Arena when the Ottawa Senators are playing, they draw pretty well in this market. So, I'm curious about that.
So, who'd be the bottom three? It'd be Arizona, Columbus, and Dallas?
No, Dallas?
Well, Dallas definitely lost fans after this playoffs. It's not exactly the most engaging playoff hockey.
I was going to say, we know there's at least one here.
their TV ratings dropped this year, guys. That's how boring they were.
Hey, I sent you the Game 7 TV
figures. That was one game.
Whatever,
that was one game,
they got a reward for that payoff. The people that stuck the highest boost. What was it, 99% jump?
Hanging on to one game. Their most loyal fan said, nah, we're out. over the period of a season, Vic.
I know they're exciting this year, but do you think there's a lot of Panthers fans in BC?
Yeah, that might be the other one that I would go for. Because, you know, at least Tampa, there's the bandwagon jumpers. They've won cups.
Yeah.
Florida.
It's got to be the Reinhardt family, and that's about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's probably about it.
This text comes in. Who has more local fans, the Oilers or the Flames? I think it's the Flames, right?
Oh, no.
You think it's
the Oilers? I think the dynasty factor with the Oilers.
Really?
I think it's the other way. Yeah.
Because the
I feel like
passing
I see,
down the legacy.
Yeah, I hear that. I feel like I see more Flames stuff out and about, though. Like, even at Nat Bailey, when we were there on Friday, it was before game two.
That's true.
We saw a Giordano Flames jersey. We saw something else, too. Another Flames.
We saw Johnny Gaudreau one.
Yeah, Johnny right. Gaudreau Flames jersey.
Yeah, there was multiple Flames jerseys out. But that's red, ties in with the crowd.
I feel like there's more Oilers fans because every time they start getting good, you start hearing about the dynasty and how many cups have they won. Like, I just hear Oilers fans a lot more. Maybe I don't see them. Maybe they start whispering, remember the five cups we won? Remember that?
Well, if you go into the interior, you would get a lot more Flames fans. Like the Kootenays areas, you would get more Flames fans.
Yeah,
right?
Or the Okanagan.
Yeah. Because I feel like in the East Kootenays, like the Flames actually are their team. I might be wrong on that. Text in 650-650.
Okay, when we were talking about the Battle of BC last week, remember we got text from Kelowna saying, hey, there are some Canucks fans here, but there's a lot of Oilers and Flames fans. So, you know, other parts of BC, are they exclusive to the Canucks? Not necessarily.
Anyways, we had no intention of that.
Why are we having this on air? It's a sports radio station, not a holiday station.
thank you for the text, 650-650. All right.
Big slogan for the station, home of holiday chat, Sportsnet.
But also, what was the phrase Shana used? Failing by committee.
Yeah, failure by committee.
Look, the boss isn't here. No one else is here in the building except us. This is what you get.
It's a holiday, man. There are no rules on a Holiday Monday here on the People's Show. All right.
I haven't slept in a while. We just got a lot going on today.
Faber, stop with that. Well, time dropped. All right. Yesterday, Brian Rust gets his contract, and it suddenly raises a level of eyebrows. Say, hey, what is Pittsburgh doing? Not that it was a bad deal. 5.125 for Brian Rust over the course of 6 years. You know, I thought it was kind of in the wheelhouse. I know there's been a lot of debate. It's like, oh, did he take a team-friendly one? Did they overpay? Whatever it was. I kind of saw Brian Rust somewhere in that $28 to $34 million range. And, again, we talk about total money a lot. That's how agents look at it. How do we get total money, and how do we parse it up for the amount of years? But total money is what they're looking at. You know, just shy of $31 million. I thought this is kind of where he would land. Surprised it was 6 years.
Yeah.
But you start looking at what Pittsburgh is planning here. And just to be clear, I don't think this, like, is an indicator of what JT Miller could get. They're in totally different stratospheres and in totally different ballparks. But what does this mean for Pittsburgh moving forward? Because we've talked about Pittsburgh and Vancouver a lot. Obviously, the connections with the management groups. At 5.125, does that lend itself to saying Pittsburgh's got a lot more money to deal with now to bring back their Letangs and their Malkin?
I think that is, you know, that's what Pittsburgh is saying, right? Even as recently as about an hour ago, Ron Hextall was speaking in Pittsburgh and saying, on those Malkin and Letang situations, he said, we have had discussions very recently and we'll continue those. We would like to sign both players. We'd like to keep Gino as a Pittsburgh Penguin for the rest of his career. Tanger is the same. That's fine. The number, though, is it an easier sell to say Russ just signed for $5 million? Remember that report we heard from last week?
Mm-hmm.
With that $5 million number? Now if you go back to those guys and say, hey, Russ, this is his money deal.
But here's the thing. Is
take a little team friendly because mm-hmm. we want to bring the band back together. I don't know if it's going to happen with both guys, but to me, I think the case is stronger if you're trying to play hardball here.
Sure. I don't know if I'm going to use Brian Rust as that case because talent still dictates that.
Sure.
And you know who else is taking less money on that team?
Sid.
Sid.
Yeah, 8.7.
I think it's a lot easier to make that case to say, hey, look, Sid's taking 8.7. He did it for long term. Like, this is just what we do. And it's not like Gino wasn't making more than Sid, but if you wanted to make the sales pitch of, like, guys take less on this team, I'm not using Brian Rust as my example.
No, but it is a, hey, look at more recently. In the end, he gets his money, right? But yep. There's probably a case to be made. If he hits UFA status, somebody's probably going to pay him six. Somebody's probably going to pay him 5.5 per season, depending on that term. Maybe he doesn't get the full 6 years.
Yeah.
But in the end, he probably gets in that same range we're talking about. So I think if you are the management in Pittsburgh, you can make that case. Now, here's the question I have. If you are looking at shaking up this team and saying, hey, they simply weren't good enough last year, or they're inconsistent because Gino has been inconsistent, what are you changing then? If you're bringing back the band, what are you exactly changing? So I think they require some sort of change. And it's as much as I love Gino Malkin, you know that I do, I think that second line center position is where they need to make that change.
I'm curious if they just need a better succession plan, right? Because even if they bring back Malkin, maybe you just do what the Oilers are doing right now. So, you know what, Malkin, break glass in case of emergency. Maybe we'll put you down the middle, but maybe you're just a winger right now. And, hey, we'll put you with Sid.
Sure.
And you can go bank a lot of points and all that sort of stuff. And maybe we put incentives in your contract.
Yeah.
You can make that up because he'll be plus 35 at the stage.
You talked about succession plan there. And of all the teams that we've talked about, linked to JT Miller in the last while, the more I think about it, Pittsburgh makes the most sense to me because you're in a position where you're saying, we need you for now. You're a near 100-point player. You can play the middle. You can play on the wing. You give us options. But if you're talking about what do they have coming next, Pittsburgh generally, as long as Crosby's playing, want to be in the conversation. They want to be in the discussion. JT Miller might be, you know, we talk about the Canucks, the timing is not right to sign a long-term deal. I think the timing is perfect for Pittsburgh if they were to make a move like that because you could lock that guy in and you can extend that window a little bit more depending on what happens with Crosby.
I'm really just curious, though, like, where does Pittsburgh see themselves? Because I do think you have to go all in right now, right? You have three
next
more
2 years you have to.
Yeah, I think the next 2 years you say, Sid, look, you're still playing at an elite level. We get the right pieces around you. I do think we can go 2-3 rounds and see what happens. Then maybe we push even further. That's what the reality is for the next 2 years. But are you going to give JT Miller that type of money? because then you're looking at the worst version of what Vancouver's facing.
Yep.
Vancouver wants to get 4 years out of JT Miller and kind of live with the last two. If you're Pittsburgh, you probably want to go all in with someone a bit younger because then you have that succession plan. Like, JT Miller's not a succession plan to me off of Malkin. He's a help us right now plan.
He's an extendo window plan, but to me, you're right. You want to go younger, but how many of those guys down the middle are available, right? Like, how many of those guys legitimately are available? And I think most important for Pittsburgh right now is you need an impact player. Like, Gino, in reputation and in history, will go down as one of the greatest Penguins ever, but in the here and now, he's simply not healthy. He just doesn't play. You're Pittsburgh. You're saying we need a certain thing in that two spot. We need a certain player on the wing or down the middle, and that's why I think in the here and now, succession plan, I'm not thinking a decade from now. I'm talking about 2 or 3 years. How do you make sure that the 2 or 3 years that you have a Sidney Crosby, that you're in the discussion, you're winning rounds in the playoffs, you're giving, you know, the best player of his generation an opportunity to compete every single year? That's why I think the JT Miller situation makes a lot of sense to me, because you're saying, all right, we need a horse right now. We need a guy that can, you know, just bring up points, who's strong at what he does. He's a top 10 scorer in the NHL. And there's only a few of those guys on a value contract right now.
Good for them to get that deal done, though. It feels like something that's very key to kind of what they are. And I'm really not sure how they would have gone about trying to replace Brian Rust.
Yeah.
Well, and it just fits perfectly. You still get the Rust, Crosby, Gensel line. What they do down the second line now, because you've talked about Kapanen as well,
yep,
is something that they got to do there. He's a restricted free agent. Malkin's kind of floating with no wingers right now. Zucker, you know, kind of overpriced at 5.5. They already gave Jeff Carter money. So clearly, like, the next 2 years, if you just follow the actions, we can talk about the future, but they gave Jeff Carter 2 years. At $3 million per, $3.125 per. So they're invested in what the next 2 years look like.
Oh, big time. And, you know, we talk about the forward group, but I'm really intrigued to see what happens with Chris Letang. And the reason I say that is one of the names we've talked a lot about in this market is John Marino.
Right.
If Letang walks, if he goes to Montreal because his former agent's there and all that.
There goes the Marino chance.
Marino's their number one right shot defenseman. Yeah. So this whole idea of, oh, John Marino could be available via trade, if they're without a point-producing defenseman, a guy that can handle the puck and who can skate it out and is offensively dynamite, John Marino is that much more important.
John Marino.
Or that guy. 25 years old as well, man. Like, you're not going to let him walk away then. You're not going to, you know, trade him. So that is why there's a bit of a trickle-down effect here as well.
What do you think is the bigger priority then? Letang or Malkin to them?
I think it's Letang.
I kind of sit there with you too. Just because, and we were talking about this last week when we were mentioning Malkin, you know, availability is an ability, and he's missing significant chunks of time, and that's the worry too. And I mentioned this last week when we were talking about Vancouver and Malkin, is if he's not around for 30% of the games, and you're signing him to a short-term deal, you're not really getting maximum value of what you want out of that. Nowhere close to that. So you're paying a premium because he's not homegrown and any of that sort of stuff. And then you might not get him for a bunch of the games. It's concerning.
No, it is. And that's why I think you have to start looking at those other options. And, you know, guys don't pop up at those positions all that often. So this year, and it's not only the JT thing, like Mark Scheifele, Nazem Kadri, all these guys are part of that conversation, because you're saying when he's playing right, Gino is one of the best.
Yep.
When he's playing. Are these other guys more available? And if you have to pay or if you have to make a trade, are they the better option? And that's the real, I think, thought that Ron Hextall is going to be having, you know, as the offseason goes here. He can say all he wants, that he wants, you know, Gino to retire as a Penguin and all that. But if you're going, what, another 40 games without him playing this year, 35 games, that puts a lot more pressure on Sidney Crosby. That puts a lot more pressure further down the lineup for guys to produce. And you can't be wasting away years anymore.
You mentioned Scheifele. Now, the same argument I would make for him that we're talking about JT Miller, maybe he's just a little bit too aged out. What about Pierre-Luc Dubois from them? Like, that's a succession plan. That's to say, hey, we get you in. You get to be the second-line center behind Sid for a couple of years, and we think like you can fit in the competitive window and profile that we're looking for. And then once we're done here, you'll be 25, 26.
Yep.
we'll see what we build around you, whether you're first line, second line, but at least it gives us an idea of what we have here, and we don't go from Sid and Malkin to scorched earth.
I think that makes sense, but here's the issue I see with that, is if you're making a move for Dubois, you need pieces. You need assets.
Yeah.
And Pittsburgh doesn't really have that, right? They don't have those highly coveted prospects. Their cupboards are pretty bare. So if you're looking for that younger player, you're going to have to pay a premium. Just don't see Pittsburgh having that package that, you know, Winnipeg would be like, oh, yeah, we got to make this deal. Other players, however, for, you know, an example, the Canucks deal, right? Let's just say if there's a JT Miller deal to be done, what would be a pretty big piece in that? Probably John Marino, right? Like, at least are you in a position where you offer, you know, something that the other team wants? And I don't know if Pittsburgh has that for Winnipeg. I think Pittsburgh has that for Vancouver, though. A low-key spot that I'd be looking at for Geno Malkin, if he doesn't stay in Pittsburgh, Florida.
The Panthers?
Yeah. That's a team that needs a second-line center. Sam Bennett did a good job playing with Huberto, but just imagine if they get him on a reasonable price to play second line. It's not all on him. You still got Sasha Barkov. You still have other players that are high-end players. And I could see Geno thriving there as long as he's healthy.
The other team? It's almost lazy to link Russian players to these two places, but we'll do it.
Tampa Bay?
No, I was going to say the Rangers.
Oh, okay.
Because the Rangers have a cap issue next season, which is why, like, I think one of the difficulties in pulling off a JT Miller trade is because, like, where are they going to fit 5.25 and then also try to make more improvements to their roster. But could you do a plus 35 deal for Geno and say, hey, the incentives, the overages go to our next year after that. So can you come in at a certain number that works for us? And then if you play a certain amount, like, we'll overpay on your bonuses, but can we make it work for the year after? Because they do have a bit more flexibility then.
So JP Barry is his agent, right?
And by the way, they also need a second line center.
They do. But the most clients that JP has is on the Washington Capitals. So you talk about Russian reunions. Can you imagine that?
Him and Ovi?
He switches sides to the... That would be
insane. That would be wild.
I don't know where they fit him in the lineup, but that would be insane.
All right. We got to go to break here. Vic Nizar and Randy Jan. A lot more still to come. We'll talk about Andrew Wiggins. We'll get to the F1. What was the race this week?
Spanish Grand Prix.
All right. We'll do Randy Janda's breakdown of the Spanish GP. Also, Jamie Dodd getting into it as well.
Oh, Dodd's all in.
Yeah. He's all the way bought in now.
Tough week for me, a lifelong Ferrari fan.
Low-key, he told me off-air that he is so into this, and he's such a Ferrari fan, that he's now going to buy a Ferrari at some point in his life.
Yes.
He's committed to this.
This is the only thing holding me back.
He's selling his home to live out of a Ferrari.
He would make bank.
That would be like the equivalent of like buying a jersey. Be like, oh, you know, I'm a big fan, buying the car.
Yeah, just got to buy a Ferrari. Just get a reasonable entry-level Ferrari.
Jamie Newton can buy hats and jackets. No. Got to support the squad, man. Buying a car.
I'm going to walk into work tomorrow and Jamie's going to be decked out in all Ferrari gear. The pants, the jacket.
You're not a real Ferrari fan unless you're driving a Testarossa everywhere.
All right, we'll get into that on the other side here on The People Show, home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
This is The People Show with Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda.
Final segment of the show. Yeah, we're on earlier today. Vic Nizar, Randeep Janda. Short shows today. Canuck Central will be coming up at 2 o'clock, taking it to 4 o'clock because Colorado. And, oh no, first we have the Tampa-Florida game. Sorry, that one's at 4. And then Colorado-St. Louis later on. So it is a full day of hockey here on Sportsnet 650.
Does Tampa finish off Florida tonight? Is it over?
I think so.
Yeah, I think it was over yesterday.
Yeah.
Apparently, end of season celebrations already going on in Florida some reports.
Yeah, I don't think we have the audio on this, but there's a Tampa Bay radio station claiming that the Florida Panthers, they're reporting.
Certain members.
A non-insignificant amount of members, though, were out partying till 3 a.m.
at a certain gentleman's establishment in South Florida.
Possibly South Florida's version of the number five. Something similar, anyways. Okay. Probably not on the number five's level.
I thought you were going to say they franchised out to Florida. I was like, wow. Those ads on 650 are really working.
Crushing it. Again, that's just a report that's out there. A Tampa Bay radio station's running with it. Haven't seen it anywhere else.
So you talk about
pre-game, post-game, even during the game. The number five orange.
That's actually incredible.
The Panthers took that literally. Post-game.
During the game. Yeah, I think that series is over.
Nobody's claiming they went for the wings?
Apparently we do have
the lemon pepper wings.
Have we vetted this clip? Are we all good here? All right. Faber, let's get to it.
According to a very trusted source.
A very good source. An anonymous source, but a spot-on source who knows
this
his stuff.
A lot of the Panthers team. I don't want to say all of them.
Do we know how many?
A lot of them.
A lot is the word we got? Okay.
A lot. They were partying late into the night last night. And found themselves at a local establishment in which there are women who dance for money on stages, strip clubs.
So that's from 95.3 WDAE in Tampa Bay. That's them reporting that.
Okay, so this is a Tampa station reporting on the Florida Panthers. I wonder how much of this is...
gamesmanship?
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
Right? Create chaos when there's already chaos there.
I don't know if I totally believe it, but nevertheless.
Who knows? But that is now out there. We'll see how the Florida Panthers react to tonight. And I think they're checked out, man. You lose that game on that final seconds of the game in game two, I don't think you recover from that.
And Shana mentioned it when we talked to her hour one on the podcast. The McDonough block on Huberdeau, that was the one where it's like, man, nothing is going right for us. Nothing is going right for us. Huberdeau with the wide open net, and McDonough just very cleverly, hey, man, this way defense matters. Just pivots, stick out, did enough. And just flip that game, and then it was gangbusters from there on.
We kind of, it's the cliche, right? Hockey's about details. Hockey's about getting, you know, those minor details right. Nobody does that better than Tampa Bay.
Tampa Bay is nobody never does that out better. Of position.
And unfortunately for Florida, part of the learning experience is getting those details right, making the right decisions at the right time. And, man, in this series, they haven't got any of them down. They haven't.
Elsewhere tonight, we got Colorado St. Louis.
Yeah.
We talked a bit about Binnington and Husso, that whole thing. I'm really impressed with St. Louis. I know I picked them, but I'm for me, they've kind of carried the last two games. And I thought they were better in game three than Colorado and the Husso Binnington swap over. You know, the first Logan O'Connor goal goes in, and I think just kind of woke Colorado up, and they got to pick back up, and Kadri scores on the power play, and away they went. But I really thought St. Louis was the better team in game three, and kind of an unlucky loss.
Yeah, what has really impressed in this series is their ability to disrupt and create problems in Colorado's zone as they try to move the puck up the ice, right? You get into the grill of Akil Makar. You get into the grill of some of those defensemen. You don't give them space. You don't give them time. And that's disrupted the speed at which, you know, Colorado likes to play. So, yeah, I'm with you in the sense that I think they're more competitive than I thought they would be. And the reason we haven't seen, like, superhuman Nathan MacKinnon or superpowers Akil Makar, it's not a knock on the player. It's how well St. Louis has played. So this one looks like it could go seven. Like, legitimately, I still think Colorado, to me, is the better team overall when they, you know, when they get a little bit more consistency from their top players as they adapt to this matchup. But I could see this one easily going to seven just because St. Louis does not have an off switch. And you start throwing the body like Barbashev was throwing, even later on in that game. When
Korobchenko.
Yeah, hey, they were throwing the body around consistently. Braden Schenn, absolutely annihilating dudes. You see that enough, it takes a toll. And those star players don't play comfortable when you got guys like that throwing the body around for full 60 minutes.
I'm curious how they're going to deal with the Sam Girard exclusion as well. Right? Jack Johnson, like, this was my worry. How many minutes was Jack Johnson, Eric Johnson, and Josh Manson going to get?
Yeah.
And now?
And Bowen Byram potentially as well. Does he see an uptick as well, right?
Yeah, he's been really impressive.
Sure.
lower role, but now if he jumps up. But either way, like those three guys are going to have to play big minutes. You can't just say Taze and Makar. You guys are out there all the time. The Gerard absence matters a great deal for Colorado. So we'll see what happens tonight. Both those games on our airwaves. All right. F1, Spanish GP. What went down?
Big weekend for Red Bull. So Max Verstappen wins. Sergio Perez comes in second. And Mercedes finds some pace. George Russell on the podium at number three as well. So if you're a Ferrari fan, like our friend here, Jamie Dodd, who's diehard, all things Ferrari.
Massive.
Bad, bad race for Charles Leclerc, who should have won easily and probably would have. His engine lost power, though, pretty early in that race, and that opened the door for Max Verstappen to run away with that.
It looked like he was going to be in cruise control. He had, what, like a 10, 11-second lead?
George Russell helped him out as well, holding back Verstappen.
Because Verstappen actually had a little bit of trouble, right? He went off the track and had to readjust, and that put him off Leclerc.
And his DRS wasn't working.
And his DRS wasn't working. It looked like, oh, yeah, Leclerc's just going to cruise to victory here. And then it's funny because early in the season, it was Red Bull having the mechanical problems in the DNFs for Verstappen that was really screwing them over. And this time it was Charles Leclerc dealing with the same thing.
So with that now, with that win, some drama on the Red Bull side as well, because Sergio Perez looked like he was having the stronger race at certain parts. His car was working fine. But this is what happens in F1, where one is the lead driver. Verstappen is the guy. Perez signed with Red Bull knowing that he was number two on that list. Perez felt like his car was faster and that he should be competing for the win. Team orders said, hey, move to the side. Your teammate's going to win this race. And after the race, Perez, even on the radio when they were congratulating him on coming in second, he said, yeah, thanks. We got to talk. Like, he was not happy.
Let's go. So,
you know, interesting kind of tidbit there. It probably doesn't turn into much, but this happens a lot in F1 where you have the lead driver, but both cars are strong. Both drivers are strong. And some guys don't like being second fiddle. Even Verstappen's younger days, Daniel Ricciardo was his you know partner driver, and Ricciardo was like, "Man, I win races. I'm going to a different team." So some potential. We'll see what happens. It's a long season. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's something. But a little bit of drama there. If you're a Mercedes fan,
I feel like that's a bigger problem for Perez than it is for
Verstappen. Oh yeah. There's only Perez has been around for a long time, so I don't think anything happens. Verstappen's the guy, right? Mercedes though. Tough start for Lewis Hamilton. He got a tire puncture at the beginning of the race. He drops back to 19th, but ends up coming in 5th in the end. So they found a lot of pace in their car this week, and there were some upgrades over the last little bit. Monaco's coming up next week. Huge race. Obviously, it's a showpiece event. It's one of the biggest ones on the planet. Interesting to see how, A, Ferrari recovers, and B, can Mercedes compete with Ferrari? Because if we look at pace, I think straight line speed, Mercedes has it back. Now, it's just a matter of can they be consistent and compete with a Ferrari and Red Bull.
Mercedes getting back into the picture and sorting their car out makes it really interesting because it really looked like it was going to be just between Red Bull and Ferrari and likely between Verstappen and Leclerc. And it might still develop that way, but all of a sudden, if you start getting consistent results, like if Lewis Hamilton starts threatening again to win, that could change things in a hurry.
Well, George Russell is the guy that right now he's got control of that car, man. Like Lewis has his moments where he doesn't. George is really, really on top of it. But big weekend for Red Bull. They're now, Max Verstappen's leading the championship, and Red Bull is now number one in the constructors as well, which is the team championship. And the personal glory is with the driver's championship, but the money comes in with the constructors. If your team ends up winning that in the end, that is something that you make a lot more money. You get a lot more, a bigger piece of the pie at the end of the season. So Red Bull, for the first time this year, has pulled ahead of Ferrari.
CanCon content this weekend?
Oh, it was not great. Stroll and Latifi just on the bottom half of the grid yet again. And it's
competing, though.
They finished the race. They finished the race. Friend of the show, Nick Latifi, was not last. That's important.
At least their engine didn't die out.
No.
Lose power.
But there is some controversy on the Aston Martin thing. Apparently, Aston Martin is... Red Bull is alleging that one of the guys that used to work for them recently took up a job with Aston Martin is essentially copying their car. There's some allegations that he may have taken... It gets pretty, like... There's levels of, like, espionage in F1. It's hilarious.
You know what I think of every time you say a car loses power?
What's that?
Remember in Toy Story when they're driving on the road and the RC car loses, like the battery life dies? I was like, wow.
It kind of felt like that yesterday with Charles Leclerc.
That's what I think. Just Charles Leclerc, 11-second lead and just, wow.
There's usually a few F-bombs in there as well, though. It's not as downtrodden as yelling over the radio.
That's fair. All right. Good stuff on the F1. So what's next on the calendar?
So Monaco this week.
Right.
So usually there's, you know, depending on where they go in the world.
Quick turnaround.
Next this week, it's going to be Monaco, and that's the marquee event. There's always celebrities there. I think last time they had that race, Serena Williams was the person that was
kind of kicking it off. I think the Cannes Film Festival is also going on this
week. That's right. That was last week. So that's a race that you and I could never afford. It's kind of like Vegas. It's like, you know, you're like, oh, I'd love to go to Monaco one day to watch a race. Not in this life.
Jamie Dodd will take us once he
in his Testarossa.
Right, yeah, buys that Testarossa. We're like, guys, you know what? You earned it this week. Let's go to Monaco.
Just imagine the three of us cruising to Monaco in a Testarossa together.
Bank.
I don't even think even a Testarossa even has three seats.
Yeah,
it's a two-seater.
I'll just hang on to the spoiler.
Yeah.
I think we should pitch that to the boss. The People Show goes.
Can we get that sponsored?
People Show goes to F1, like somewhere at F1 race.
Excuse me.
It could be like an F3. It doesn't even have to be F1. We'll go like the lower divisions.
Excuse me, Max. Have you heard of a Confession Fridays? Would you like to join the show? Max? Thanks.
Max, where'd you go? I think he hung up.
All right. Lots still to get to as well here on the People Show. Yesterday, Andrew Wiggins gets his moment. It's been, 7-8 years in the making for A. Wiggy, finally having a great moment. Now, look, he's in the perfect scenario here. He's, best case scenario, fifth fiddle on that Golden State team?
Yep.
Has a role, but he's very much down the lineup of importance for the Golden State Warriors. But it's an interesting moment because, you know, he goes first overall. He's an athletic freak, all this sort of stuff. And, like, last night, that moment that he gets to have, the dunk on Luka, and just, like, he played a good game. This is kind of why you bet on athletes, like, elite athletes, because you never know when you might need them. Now, the franchise isn't built around him. But the reason, like, depth players either are elite athletes or great thinkers of the game is you just never know when you might need them. And that moment yesterday, they kind of needed him yesterday.
Oh, they did. And, you know, it's funny because we think it was his game. Steph Curry still had more points than him,
sure,
but he stepped up in a big way. And that's what I really like about this Warriors team is that Wiggins is able to fill that role. The game before, Otto Porter Jr. did that. Mm-hmm. Like, they've got guys that just step up. And we've seen it, you know, with, you know, Gary Payton II as well. When he was playing, he had the moment where he would play that same role. So to me, as much as this is about Andrew Wiggins, it's about Steve Kerr getting his guys ready for the moment.
Yeah.
There are some players that don't lean into the moment. It feels like with Kerr and his depth players, he's saying, all right, you guys are going to get a shot. You're going to get an opportunity. Be ready for that moment. Wiggins did it. Porter Jr. did it the time before that. And this team does remind me of that kind of that early iteration. Remember that had Harrison Barnes and a bunch of other players that could provide you with defensive effort, good athletes, elements of, hey, they might not be stars, but do they fit on what this team is trying to do? And with the Kevin Durant era, and they won championships, different team, built completely differently. But this new age Warriors team, they're exciting to watch, man. They're a good defensive team. They're athletic, as you mentioned. And that's why I think just having that versatility, right? Kevon Looney had a great game two games ago as well. Like, so you just have that versatility within this group that I really like. And that dunk, hilarious how they called it an offensive foul originally. Luckily, they changed that, but just absolutely posterizing Luka Doncic. And it's nice to see that. He's never going to be, you know, Maple Jordan or whatever we were calling him back in the day. He's not going to be that. And that's fair. That who can live up to
but
that?
But here's the thing.
He's found a niche.
Here's the thing. And look, this is something I got to be better at. I think we all collectively can be better at is declaring, like, busts. So we were our trivia question.
Yeah, Alexander Day.
Was Day. Like, that guy had a real NHL career.
Yes.
I understand he didn't live up to potential. And or the hype or the idea of what he could have meant. But that's still a real NHL career. And I got to be better at using the term bust. But Andrew Wiggins, again, hasn't lived up to the idea of, like, what a first overall pick can be. But has had a real NBA career and now gets to have a really cool moment that he's, for one day, in the NBA playoffs in the third round, he's the guy. Like, he was the the story last night.
Yeah.
It's punctuated by that dunk, don't get me wrong, but nevertheless, he's played his role, and he gets to have a cool moment.
We got this text coming from Eastwood and New West saying, have to disagree hard on your Wiggins point. He's been Luka's primary defender all series. He most definitely is very important. Okay, on that front.
I'm talking about roster construction.
Yes. Like, if you are looking at that team, you're saying Steph, Clay, Draymond, and
Poole,
then, you know, like, Jordan Poole has stepped up big time. So Wiggins is probably number five on that list. He has been the primary defender, and as the series, you know, wraps up at some point, and then they play in the finals, and they play whoever they're going to play, his job as a primary defender is still going to be very important. But when you're talking about, you know, the five most important players, he ain't beating out the other guys.
No.
He's not.
But
and Luka's still getting his points. Luka's still getting his, right? Like,
yeah.
Being a primary defender on Luka ain't easy. And that's a good job that he's done in that role to a certain extent. But out of five players, he is five, in my opinion.
Whatever your role is, play it to the maximum of your ability. And he is doing it to the maximum of his ability. But I don't want to confuse the idea of, like, having a great moment means he's going to become that player all over again. I don't know if, like, another team would be like, hey, we want you to be the third person on our trio here. I don't know if that's going to happen to his future. But, hey, man, if you can be this at the for the Golden State Warriors, you can have some success because they have the infrastructure of Steph, Draymond, and Clay.
Okay, so you're talking about a role on that team. We got some breaking news from the Florida Panthers coming out.
Okay.
For the first time in 24 days, Joe Thornton will be playing. They are bringing out the old guy to maybe motivate this team.
Let's go!
Breaking news.
Anthony Duclair, Ryan Lomberg out, Anton Lundell, and yes, old man Thornton, Joe Thornton, will be suiting up for Game 4. That is an interesting move. Right, you've got obviously a really good player in his prime, but now this team is desperate. They just need something else. They need something. And I don't know what Joe Thornton can offer 5-on-5 these days. Legitimately, he's not going to play very much. But that's just Andrew Brunette basically saying, all right, Duclair, you weren't good last game. We need more out of you. Let's switch it up. Let's get the old guy in.
That is the final roll of the dice.
Oh, yeah, big
time. Hoping it
goes
your way. That's all it is.
Win one for the old guy, essentially, is the is the plan here.
You guys allegedly put in a shift last night. Now the old guy's going to make you work.
Yeah, that's the side story there. That's the side story that.
All right.
I'd love to be a part of that post-season press conference.
We'll leave that one there. Bick Nizar, Randeep Janda, what did you have the most fun watching yesterday? Because I got to admit, the final 30 minutes of the EPL season might be my favorite. That was... Because there was a lot of question marks on both ends of the table. I had my own investment, Man United. Would they get sixth? Somehow they did, miraculously. 8 points in the last 27. Somehow finish sixth and get European football. But that was the drama compared to what was happening at the bottom end.
Yep.
Leeds serving. And also on the top end. Because for a moment there, Wolves take the early lead against Liverpool. It's like, oh, okay, we got some intrigue here today.
And Villa.
Then Villa... up 2 on Man City. And I think ultimately you knew Liverpool would get back versus Wolves.
Yeah.
And they did. Left it late, but they did. That stretch there for Man City was 10 minutes and 3 goals. They made it look so easy when it was so difficult for so long. And then suddenly it was just like boom, boom, boom. And you just kind of knew Villa would... If one got in... Maybe the others would follow, but they cratered quick.
Oh, big time. And you know what I love about soccer Twitter is that, you know, we talk about Canucks Twitter being savage and
sure. So
many reactions. The slander that was being pointed at Pep Guardiola.
Pep, in minute 68, was like, worst manager ever.
Oh, this guy is overrated. He sucks. How dare him?
By minute 81, it was like...
He's the GOAT again. He's one of the greatest.
What a G!
Like, soccer Twitter, on a global level, overreacts to everything, and it's beautiful. That was impressive. I love the relegation battle, though. That, to me, is like, that is life and death when it comes to soccer, right?
Because your
team goes down, you might not be coming back up for ever in some cases.
I tried tuning into the Burnley match
a
little bit, like late. They did not look that desperate.
No.
Like, Leeds were pushing it, and late goal as well for Leeds, but I was disappointed at Burnley's effort. I really thought they would survive.
Oh, wait. Burnley was underwhelming? I, for one, am shocked. Their whole existence is underwhelming.
That's fair. But just given the circumstances.
Like, yeah.
throw everything there, and it was leaving a lot to be desired.
Okay, so that was the cool stuff on the pitch. I think the biggest impact move was off the pitch. Kylian Mbappe's deal.
Yeah.
That.
So like, he's staying in PSG. That's the last Tuesday looked like he was going to Madrid.
So he, if for a lot of soccer, casual soccer fans, French winger, you know, extraordinaire, striker, he does it all, basically. 23 years old.
He's probably your kid's favorite player.
Yeah, absolutely. He's been linked to Real Madrid for the last 2 years. It's the club that he supported growing up. There's these pictures of him, like all these posters in his room and all that. Like, but French player plays at PSG, which is the most loaded sports team on the planet right now, even more so than Man City. The deal that he signs, listen to this, signing bonus on a 3-year deal, folks, 300 million euro.
It's all right.
He's making 100 million euro per season after tax.
It's all right.
He has a say in who the manager is, and they have to ask him about player signings as well.
They basically gave him the club.
They give him $600 million for 3 years and said, you're the shot caller. That is the most ridiculous contract in sports. Not because it's a lifetime contract. Like the Bobby Bonilla ones, haha, that's funny. This man is more than halfway to being a billionaire on a 3-year deal. Ain't no money like soccer money, folks.
It's a really scary precedent to set. Look, each team can do their own thing. I fully support that. But it is a scary precedent to set of, okay, he got this, so what does the next player get? And someone's going to make his mistake down the road, and it is a scary, scary thing to do. Now, I think part of this is, you know, Qatari owners.
Yep.
You got the World coming up. That was part of the appeal of getting Messi. It's like, hey, we're going to bring one of our players to Qatar.
Yep.
And I imagine that's part of it. And so just, hey, pay whatever.
And France is the favorite as well heading into that tournament. So.
Absolutely. So I'm sure there's a massive commercial appeal to what PSG is doing, because I can't imagine you're just doing this with the idea of like, oh, let's just do it for the sake of taking a massive loss. They are giving up a lot.
Oh, they are. Big time. And you know what the funny thing is? When we talk about like hockey contracts, we say, oh, yeah, this player, you know.
I mean, we're fighting over JT Miller's like hundreds of thousands
of
dollars. Yeah.
Right? Or nine or whatever. He's going to be a free agent again at the age of 26, which is going to be even a more ridiculous contract. And he's probably going to be a free agent yet again around 29, 30, where he can cash in yet again. So, like, we talk about earning power.
He's easily going to clip billion.
Yeah. I don't know, man. Like, family planning and stuff. First sport, I'm putting little Randeep whenever he's born. Whenever that happens in life. In soccer. Soccer first.
Bick Nizar and Randeep Janda. Before we go, we got to read this one last text here. It came into the Dunbar Lumber text message inbox. Who wants to read this one?
I think, you know, it's the one from Goalie Dad 26. Are we going to that one or a different one?
No.
Okay, I thought we were going to end off on some levity here.
It was an unsigned text.
Is it about our co-host?
Yeah,
here?
The person we're turning it over to. Oh, you know what, Jamie?
All right.
Fire away.
This came in earlier. I cannot believe how jealous the sports hosts on 650 are of Dan Riccio. Riccio could and can host 650 from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. solo, and the show would be awesome and have the highest ratings ever of all sports talk shows. That is some passion, some pro Riccio passion right there.
That's from an unsigned Gary.
John Marino.
I wonder what Reach thinks about the idea of hosting 6 hours solo every day.
I don't know if he's on board with that. Nevertheless,
I think Gary,
I'd love to see it happen.
I think Gary just volunteered Reach. We got love for Reach.
We got plenty of love
we
for Reach.
We got a lot of love for Reach.
Reach is our guy. Come on.
Nobody is jealous because it was an all caps. We love Reach.
We're pro our guy, Dan Riccio. But, sometimes... he finds himself in the line of fire sometimes. That's all. That's all that happens.
Yeah, he did it by showing me the Chara photo once, and then we turned it into content.
I know he's not the biggest guy.
But he's our guy. He's our guy. And he's up next with Satyar Shah. Coming up here on Canucks Central. Taking it at 4 o'clock. Lots of hockey on the way as well. On the home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.